Rowan, possibly with some assistance by Pearl, will come up and light our chalice. Something for consideration this morning. Have you ever thought about how many UUs it takes to change a light bulb? The answer is none, because UUs are not afraid of the dark. That actually had serious meaning to me, even though it's a joke. Marty Daniels is going to lead us in our affirmation.
So I'm going to do the opening words first.
Oh. Told you there would be turbulence.
Good morning, everyone. Hi. It's nice to... there are some new people here or faces I haven't seen before, so please make sure that we gather afterwards and say hi to our new people. I'd also like to welcome Rebecca and Duncan back home. So last week at Prairie Beach, there were about 65 people from this congregation who went, along with about 65 people from Ellsworth and about 14 people from Castine. It was a wonderful time going to Prairie Beach. People on Saturday morning would get up early to, well, I guess it was around 7:15 that the sun actually rose. So that's early for me. And walk along the beach or even swim in the cold waters. I don't know if you remember Liliana. This is Amy Fiorelli's daughter, 7 years old. She went into the cold, cold ocean at least 3 times over the course of the weekend. I believe Amy just watched. But then there was this Halloween dance on Saturday night where all the children and many of the adults were dressed up in fairly elaborate costumes. And Reverend Charles Stevens, who was there, and I went dressed as we were, claiming that our costumes in jeans and t-shirt suggested that we were ministers on retreat. Yeah, I know. Nobody bought it there either. But I have to tell you that this was a rather expensive weekend for me because I received a ticket for $200 from a police officer. Yeah. What do you mean, what did I do? It amazes me, all this projection. What did I do? No, I just told the police officer off. No, clearly the police and I don't always agree on things. It's okay, we don't have to agree. And I tell him that, but that doesn't seem to matter either. Now, fortunately for me, the policeman was a fake. Yeah, he was at the he was an Ellsworthian from the UU church there, who was at the Halloween dance dressed up as a police officer. So it was a joke, though I have to admit that the bright orange, reddish ticket that he gave me seemed actually quite real at first. So some of you actually saw him, I believe, there, right? So the ticket said, so it says here, offense, check all that apply. And says reason for the ticket. And so the very first one, and this is what he checked off, failure to wear a costume. That's what I had to pay the $200 for, failure to wear a costume. And it said, and then he wrote, where is your costume? So I cracked up laughing, actually. And I was aware of what a gift it was for the three congregations to be together in fellowship for a weekend, to break bread together, to be in one another's company, to worship together. Church is about community, about connection, about transformation. And what a gift it is to be together. Blessed be. We are going to sing hymn number 347. Gather the Spirit, 347 in the gray hymnal. Please stand as you are willing and able.
Let us read the affirmation together. Love is the spirit of this church. The quest for truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge in freedom, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony with the divine. Thus do we covenant with one another and with the source of our being.
Thank you.
It's time to see what shenanigans I can cause during today's time for all ages. So come join me, young and young at heart, for the love of all that is holy. Let's find out the truth about Fruit Loops. All right. I'm going to pass this around. Everybody take a bag. And I want you to think about something for me, please, please. Does anybody know what the word holy means?
Yeah, something to do with God.
That's definitely one way of looking at it. Being religious, okay.
Holy means there's a bunch of holes in something.
That is actually a good point as well. Holy does mean there's a bunch of holes in something.
There are holes in that.
Yes. Will you pass this around, please?
Holland.
What?
Holland.
Holland. Yes, that's right. That's another holy. We are holy, holy, filled with holes. Like holy moly. Okay, aside from being gluten-free, soy-free, and dairy-free, what do these foods have in common? That's right. They all have holes in them. So many religious traditions have holy foods. And what I discovered after some very serious research is that lots of these holy foods are also holy, holy. So that's almost like doubly, triply holy. Yes?
Does that mean Swiss cheese is holy?
It is. Do you want that to be the UU holy food? Because we're going to talk about that in a few minutes.
Yes.
So hold that thought. Although it has dairy. Okay. So I did some research and found a bunch of different holy, holy foods from different traditions. Now this is Hamantaschen. Now, somebody, a very nice Jewish friend, told me it doesn't have a hole. It does have a hole because you put a filling in it. And that's why I like holy foods, because I like the filling. Now, Hamantaschen, it's Jewish. It's eaten at Purim, which is a celebration of victory over a really mean person. And they symbolize ears. And you may also notice that ears are very holy. So we're all kind of holy. At the same time, eating ears is kind of gross, but they don't look gross. Okay, so, whoops. It's going to come up again. Okay, so eating ears is disgusting. The next thing that we're going to look at is tumpeng. Okay, so this is an Islamic food, and it's eaten to commemorate the Prophet Muhammad's birthday. And a cone fills a hole in the middle of a bunch of other yummy foods. And also, mountains have holes, right? Some mountains are volcanoes, so some mountains have holes with fillings. So, well, yes, but it's still a type of mountain. So, so this is a holy, holy food too in my book. Now this is called, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation, I am sure, because I don't know anybody who is a practitioner of Hinduism to tell me how to pronounce it. But it looks like modak to me, modak. And it is eaten to celebrate Ganesh, the god of new beginnings and remover of obstacles. Yes, it's a filled dumpling with sweet coconut. And Ganesh loved sweets. This one is the god Ganesh's favorite food. So, do you think a hole is an obstacle, or is it a new beginning, since we're talking about holes?
Both.
Okay, I think so, too. Plus, it's a new beginning of a filling. Now, I don't have a picture of a pretzel, because you all have pretzels in there. But if you will look at your pretzels, pretzels are actually a holy, holy food. Because they, in the Christian tradition, French monks, a long time ago, the year 610 AD, created them out of strips of dough, and they symbolized a child's arms crossed in prayer.
So they are holy food.
Yes, they are a holy food. Now, we are Unitarian Universalists. As far as I know, we don't have a holy food. Although evidently we eat lots of holy foods, including, these are called Freedom Fruit Loops, which I thought was super duper. They're free of allergens, but they also, having the big red Freedom on it, made me think, aw, they're holy American too. So you had the idea for Swiss cheese being UU holy food, because it would be holy, holy, and also holy dairy. Okay, anybody have any other ideas?
Cheerios.
That's a good idea too. I like Honey Nut Cheerios. The nuts, though, nuts are hard here. What?
I don't like nuts. And also, maybe it could be donuts.
Donuts are an awesome holy food. And I bet I could figure out how to make allergen-free donuts too. I bet that I could. And if I couldn't, Mandy could. Donuts. That's a good nomination. Veggie straws. Yes, they have a hole in them too. That's a good idea also. Other ideas?
Strawberries.
I like strawberries too. And actually, that's a really good point. Lots of food in nature has holes. And strawberries do when you cut them open. Yes, Jack.
An orange has a hole in it. Because when you open it and you peel it, at the top there's a hole in it.
That's true. Yes, oranges are another holy food.
Yep.
All right. So I'm going to keep these nominations, and you guys should give me more. Because I'm going to take them all to church council, and now that I'm, and I'm going to see if I can get them officially implemented. And then after we get them implemented as our church's holy, holy foods, then I can take it to the UUA nominating committee and see if I can actually get it to be holy, holy food across our denomination. Okay? All right. You can eat the holy food now. Let's sing them out, okay?
Anna and Andrea are going to do the offering for us. When I found this church, I felt spiritually and emotionally drained, and this church filled that emptiness. Many others in the community, before they can begin to think about spiritual or emotional anything, need something to fill a different emptiness, one of basic physical needs. There are children in this town who go hungry. I'm thankful that our church has chosen the Greater Belfast Area Ministerium Food Cupboard as our November Shared Plate recipient. Please give generously. I see these children as a social worker. We UUs are not afraid of darkness, and we are also not afraid to fill its void. Please close your eyes. Breathe in light. Breathe out love. Breathe in peace. Breathe out joy. Breathe in hope. Breathe out kindness.
After the worship service at Ferry Beach last Sunday, Each congregation met individually as a way to bring closure to the weekend's experience. One person from our congregation spoke very movingly about being with the children, and what a miracle they all are. I was listening to a PBS segment recently where a researcher and author talked about the need to reclaim the child in us, since the child's wisdom, innocence, laughter, and beauty are so very much needed in today's world. To reclaim our own child, in fact, is actually to experience our own rebirth. Rainer Maria Rilke must have had these thoughts in mind when she wrote this poem. At once the winged energy of delight carried you over childhood's dark abysses. Now, beyond your own life, build the great arch of unimagined bridges. We learn far too early in our childhood the seeming necessity of protecting ourselves from hurt and pain. Holes are poked through our innocence, our feelings, our sensitive self. Sometimes the holes are small, like a pinprick in a balloon, and sometimes the holes are extensive and we experience the trauma like a burst balloon. My first memory of a hole piercing my own innocence was at age 5 when my dog died, killed by a car. What did I know about death? What do I still know about death? How is it possible that something I loved could be forever gone? What kind of world did I live in if it wasn't safe? And then there was the bully in grade school who found a great sport to beat me up or tackle me forcefully to the ground in a seemingly innocuous game of flag football that resulted in weeks in a sling because of a broken collarbone. Why would someone do that? Why would someone purposely hurt another? And then there were all the authorities, parents and aunts and uncles, teachers and ministers, telling my twin brother and I how to behave, what to think, and what to feel. My brother and I would end up competing a lot, vying to be the best son, the best student, the best kid at church, yes, the best Boy Scout, also yes, and so on. And we would kiddingly say, like the Smothers Brothers, do some of you remember the Smothers Brothers? We would kiddingly say, Mom and Dad liked me best. But underneath the kidding was a sad hope that maybe it was true. Now, all of us have these kinds of stories where holes have been poked into our own child soul. The same thing happens as adults. We have been taught from childhood to live and accept a domination society where there's always someone judging us, evaluating us, correcting us, telling us how to behave, what to think, and what to feel. Expand this idea and we become aware that the world of empire and corporation doesn't care about our spirit and our soul. It cares only about how we can be used to augment its own desires, power, and greed. What is the result of this onslaught of holes piercing our soul? We live divided lives. We live wounded lives. We live a contradiction. We live in two worlds, an inner and an outer world. The charming feature of childhood soon disappears, writes Parker Palmer, and is replaced by an adult pathology. As the outer world becomes more demanding, we stop entering the world of the soul. And the closer we get to adulthood, the more we stifle the imagination that journey requires. Why? Because imagining other possibilities for our lives would remind us of the painful gap between who we most truly are and the role we play in the so-called world. As we become more obsessed with succeeding, or at least surviving, we lose touch with our souls and disappear into our roles. The child becomes the masked and armored adult, at considerable cost to self, to others, and to the world at large. The cost can be itemized in these ways, says Parker Palmer. One, we sense that something is missing in our lives and search the world for it, not understanding that what is missing is us. Two, we feel fraudulent, even invisible, because we are not in the world as who we really are. Three, we project our inner darkness on others. Four, our inauthenticity and projections make real relationships impossible, leading to loneliness. And lastly, our contributions to the world, especially to the work we do, are tainted by duplicity and deprived of the life-giving energies of true self. Our culture and society want us to live in this duplicitous and inauthentic life, but somehow we know that this is not where we need to be. After his death in 2015, I watched a special on Leonard Nimoy, the actor who played the Vulcan philosopher and officer, Mr. Spock, in the Star Trek series. This is Star Trek, by the way. I was struck by the numbers of people interviewed who, in remembering him, told of how they related to Spock as an alien, saying that they too often feel like an alien in life. And I wondered if this is a common phenomenon precisely because we have alienated ourselves from our own soul. Of course, Leonard Nimoy also had another side to him. Apparently, he was an unlikely sex symbol and was asked by a woman when giving a speech at Ohio's Bowling Green State University, "Are you aware that you are the source of erotic dream material for thousands and thousands of ladies around the world?" He calmly responded, "May all your dreams come true." But I digress. Sort of. Actually, I happen to think that human sexuality and the intimacy with another brings us back to our soul and the truth of who we truly are. But it tends to be momentary. And our own spiritual life keeps nagging us into a more permanent relationship with ourselves. Our soul keeps calling us to be whole. And when we are whole, we are enlightened to the reality that in returning to our soul, we are holy. Marianne Williamson, author and lecturer on matters spiritual, talks about our dividedness a bit differently than Parker Palmer. She notes that during the 20th century, the Western mind fell into a materialistic stupor, so enamored of visible, tangible complexities that invisible realities were shoved to the margins of our consciousness and our culture. Fortunately, the pendulum always swings back, she continues, and at last we are emerging from the rationalistic fog of an over-secularized worldview. We are collectively remembering that we are spiritual beings, the remembrance itself like Atlantis rising from a sea of ancient forgetfulness. It arises new, transformed, and cleansed of what it used to stand for, now recognized as key to both our mission and to our joy. The material world can be a marvelous place, full of power and excitement, but it is not the world of ultimate truth. Only the truth of a radical, fundamental love is unalterable and eternal. It's the truth we remember at the end of our lives, or perhaps at the end of the life of a loved one. It's a truth we see when the superficial preoccupations that compete for our attention and rob us of our life force begin at last to melt away. I am concerned, for example, that our current preoccupations, perhaps even obsession with the news, with Donald Trump, with politics, is carrying us to the dark abysses. I want to know if the truth of a radical, fundamental love that is our heart and soul manifests itself in the world through compassion. I want to know if we can still feel compassion for the 8 people who died this week in Manhattan. Are we becoming desensitized because these kinds of attacks are becoming too common throughout this country and the world? I want to know if we can feel compassion for the young man who killed these people and injured others. I want to know if we can feel compassion for Mr. Trump. And I don't have to like any of the policies or behavior of a person in order to have compassion for that individual. But without compassion, our life and soul are divided. Without compassion and radical love, our gifts and our light cannot penetrate the world's shadow. Our soul keeps calling us to be whole, and enlightenment is the awareness and experience of our being holy. As a ministerial candidate, both in the 70s when I was a Baptist student minister, and in the late 90s as a UU ministerial candidate, I had 3 courses known as Clinical Pastoral Education, CPE. Lane knows all about this. 1 at Boston City Hospital, 1 at Montreal General, and a 3rd at Fletcher Allen in Burlington, Vermont. These experiences were never comfortable for me because the pain that people experienced, physically and spiritually, was always crushing. I told you once before that one of my patients who was dying from cancer asked me why God did this to her, and in turn to her young daughter who would no longer have a mother. It was devastating listening to her pain. During each CPE class, we candidates were asked to do an autopsy. Excuse me, to view one. We probably could have done just as well. So I've seen 3 autopsies in my life. You can imagine how gruesome they are. One of the autopsies happened to be performed on a former patient of mine. I managed to get through each one without vomiting, and I could write in my journal what it was like to go through that experience and look so closely at death. At least the pain for those 3 individuals that they had to go through had passed. But not for the parents of the stillborn child in the birthing room. Because the parents were Catholic, I called the Catholic priest to do the necessary ritual. But I was there, and I could see clearly the trauma, the pain, the hell that the parents were going through. And it was unbearable to watch. I'd much rather view an autopsy. But unbearable or not, I don't ever want to lose my gift of compassion. I want my soul whole enough to feed, to feel other people's pain as well as my own. And how I yearn for a taste of enlightenment, to be aware of the holy within. There's nothing arrogant about this. We each have an abundance of gifts, as well as our own calling to manifest those gifts in the world. This is what our congregational conversation after the service will be about downstairs, divining and owning the gifts that we have. This, to me, actually is part of our spiritual journey. Children seem to have a way of seeing through adults' inauthenticity and dividedness. But the holes that they pierce us with may actually help us become more whole. Because in their own way, in their own language, they are always asking us, is your inside the same as what you seem to be on the outside? We owe it. We owe it to our own soul and to our own children to fly on the winged energy of delight in wholeness and in holiness. May it always be so, and amen. Take your precious gifts and stretch them out until they span the chasm between two contradictions. For the God wants to know himself in you.